It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, here are the CPG Guys.
Hello, and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I'm your co-host, Brian Gildenberg, and when I am not co-hosting this podcast, along with my partners, Sheree and Peter, I help lead North America for a retail research company called Retail Cities. And today, I'm joined by my friend and co-host and fan of the best baseball team that money can buy, Peter Vaughn. Peter, how are you, man? How's it going?
I'm getting ready to see that money turn into World Series trophies. Wouldn't that be nice, Brent?
The movie Billion Dollar Baby coming out soon for
your... Oh, Moneyball on steroids. It's the exact opposite of the Billy Bean strategy of optimization. It's like spend, spend, spend.
Let's put the money in Moneyball.
Yeah, exactly. No, I'm doing well. You know, as we record this, you and I are getting ready to head out to Las Vegas. We're going to Shop Talk. It should be fun. We're scheduled to meet with a lot of people. We're hosting a little cocktail kickoff party like we did at Grocery Shop. This time we're doing it with our dear friend Daniel from FMCG Guys and the team over at Crazy Coupon Lady. So that's going to be Sunday afternoon. Can't wait to see people at that event. I'm sure we'll post lots of pictures on LinkedIn.
That'll be good. I look forward to seeing the Red Sox front office at the Crazy Coupon Lady happy hour, because I think that's where we're buying our bullpen.
There you go.
So I'm very excited about that. And of course, by the time people hear this episode, this will all be in the past.
Academic, one might say.
Yes. So all of you listening can remember Shop Talk if you are lucky enough to have memories after 4 days in Vegas. So excellent. Well, before we get to our guest, I would just want to make sure that we ask you to help spread the word about the community we've created here on the CPG Guys. Beyond sharing our podcast with your friends, if you're using Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform that has stars on it, please leave us a rating as it helps feed the algorithm, makes us more findable by CPG and retail professionals like yourselves looking for the combination of education and entertainment we look to bring to the world. Not to tell you what review we like to have, but Chive Bars. It rhymes with Chive Bars.
I like that.
Chive Bars. We're just going to subliminally plant that in you. Of course, we are happy that the CPG Guys is part of an impressive collection of highly rated podcasts, including the CPG Guys Fast Forward, hosted by some dope who's talking now, the CPG Scoop with Riza and Jennifer, and the FMCG Guys with Daniel, Efren, and Christine over in Europe, and the FMCG Guys in particular with over 10,000 followers in the European theater of operations, to use a World War II phrase. And of course, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, whose mission is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has terrific educational and networking resources available to its members. And our third CPG Guys podcast co-host, Sri, serves as the director of Next Up. So for those of you listening to this on a podcast platform, links to our podcast, our sister podcast, our landing page on Next Up, and links to the social media profiles of Sri's performing artist daughters will be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. And today we're thrilled to be joined by an exciting player, an important and kind of poorly understood part of this new media and commerce ecosystem, which is the world of trade promotions and trade management. Today, we're going to hear about how this world is changing and how a company called Vividly is approaching this problem differently. And we're joined today by Vividly's co-founder, Nikki McNeil. Nikki, welcome to the CPG Guys.
Hey, team. Good to see you. Thanks for having me today.
Oh, and thanks for making the time. And before we get started, why don't you just tell us a little bit about Vividly and what it does and what you do, and then we'll get into some deeper questions about where you see this whole world going.
Sounds good. So Vividly is 7 years in the making. We're a venture-backed startup built by CPG for CPG for the small to mid-sized market. We ultimately allow these brands to manage their trade spend. But you both know, being veterans in the space, it's not just about planning promotions. It's understanding how to properly set them up, how to organize them, and then ultimately know how to storytell. So four founders of Vividly, yes, there are four of us. We worked nights and weekends building this trade promotion management platform actually for Perfect Snacks. That was our sole venture. The word spreads pretty quickly in the CPG space. We are a small world. And the word got out and they were really interested to see what was the magic sauce that we put into Perfect Snacks and wanted to really learn more. And so here we are, fast forward. We have a team of, you know, well over 60 and working with several verticals to really allow them to understand how to maximize their trade line.
Well, that's great, Nikki. And so, yeah, before we get into the conversation here today, we're going to put in the digital liner notes of the episode, we're going to include links to your LinkedIn profile and Vividly's LinkedIn profile, as well as Vividly's webpage. So now let's get into it. Let's start with your origin story. So assuming you weren't bitten by a radioactive spider and given superhuman powers of trade promotion, your journey started somewhere. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got into this space and how you found your way to being one of the four co-founders of Vividly?
Oh my goodness. So we're going to go back in time. So I've been in the space for a little bit over a decade. My background's in accounting and finance. I started my career at Justin's Nut Butter, where I was doing just basic accounts receivable. That's a little bit of a, you know, lifetime in Celestial Seasonings as well, doing basic staff and cost accounting. And really kind of through that journey in food and beverage, I just continued on kind of hopping from business to business, from Justin's to then Perfect Snacks to then Lily's, taking them all from infancy all the way through exit. So it was really amazing for me to be able to be part of a company where we're starting super small, you know, roughly 20 to 30 million in revenue, and then growing all the way up to 100 plus million in revenue, even going through diligence with some of these, you know, acquirers and really understanding how it is that, you know, we can continue to shape the way that these particular brands think about trade, because it does change, as you both know, right? It does change when you're a $30 million brand all the way up to 150, 500, a billion, et cetera. And so that's been my bread and butter, managing teams and really leaning into the deduction side of things is what my bread and butter is, understanding all the different distributors, their underlying fees, and figuring out ways we can properly classify it on the P&L to really benefit our gross margin. Been part of various audits, working closely with auditors to be able to better understand, you know, how to, again, maximize that opportunity of that trade line, because there are so many different types of trade spend. In my free time, I live in Golden, Colorado with my fur babies and husband. I'm a retired skydiver, and I love to mountain bike and snowboard in my free time.
Fantastic. Well, retired skydiver sounds like a good thing. Hopefully you weren't forced into retirement by some sort of by some sort of parachute-free incident. Before we jump into the questions, can you just spend a couple of seconds kind of, because we've got a lot of people who are staring at the world of trade promotions, but find it to be vague and mysterious. Can you just kind of talk through, because you mentioned a couple of terms in there that are important about deductions and gross margin and all that stuff. Can you try to just lay the landscape of that a little bit before we get into this? Because I don't think many people realize that sometimes the gross margin that a brand makes on a product is something handed down by a tablet from a mountain, and sometimes it's a choice made by an accountant. So can you just talk a little bit about how to think about that before we get into this?
Definitely. So I think kind of, you know, breaking it down is when you're going to pursue a retailer and sell in the doors, right? You are ultimately establishing a contract with that retailer. That particular retailer is going to ask you, just by the nature of retailers, to adhere to a promotion. That promotion is going to be driving your price down. And so you're going to get contracts for all that detail. And that's going to be a particular promotion or a contract that you're going to have to save and store in either a Google Drive or maybe even in a trade software, depending on the size of your business. That promotion is going to run at that retailer. You're going to get billed back or charged back weeks, months later. And that is going to have to be analyzed by your accounting system to be cross-referenced against the initial promotion that your sales team executed. The biggest thing to call out here is with that promotion that you ran, there's various fees that are embedded in that, right? There's the labor fee to just pass through the deduction from the distributor back to the manufacturer. That's going to be carved out from the raw promotion detail. You know, there are going to be other various fees that come through, such as early payment terms discounts. That again is a, you know, just a cost of doing business for the brand to pay you early in order for you to receive in that cash. And when it comes time to breaking down gross margin, again, gross margin, what's included in gross margin is, you know, it needs to directly affect the sale price of the good that you're selling to the retailer. And so gross margin, that net revenue less cost of goods sold, less trade, that ultimately needs to ensure that that is the sale price of the good, which is going to be your promotion that you're running off shelf. It's not going to be your admin fee. That's labor that's just being passed from the distributor over to the manufacturer. And so it's identifying those differences.
That is terrific. Thank you for that, Nikki, and welcome to the podcast. Brian, did you know that I'm a retired astrophysicist? Okay. I never actually started.
I thought you were a retired astrophysicist.
Oh, okay. That's
or maybe that astrophysics was simply tired of you.
So. I want to be retired at something someday soon. In any event, so Nikki, obviously promotion optimization, we've talked about this on the podcast, and we know that this whole concept is a slice of the commerce ecosystem that has been around for quite a while. What are some of the important differences in terms of how you and your co-founders at Vividly really thought about solving this problem for brands that was fundamentally different than kind of the legacy approaches?
So optimization is where every brand wants to be. Brian, I'm curious on your thoughts with how you manage this at Kantar. A lot of the brands want to get to that sexy side, that predictive modeling side. The unfortunate reality is these brands can't seem to understand like the basic blocking and tackling of trade, which is getting organized, saving those retailer contracts, ultimately planning in an Excel sheet, doesn't have to be in a software, planning an Excel sheet, all the promotions that are running for the quarter, for the year, and then having accounting clear those expenses against that calendar to understand how well did I execute my forecast. So as much as I want to go down the optimization route, a lot of brands come to us saying, hey, I totally missed the mark last year. My trade came in 4X than what I planned it to be. I don't know what I'm doing. The team internally doesn't know how to maximize this trade line, which is a great lever to play with to drive your top line, which is revenue. Help me. And so through Vividly and even through our competitors, it's really just like that we're trying to help these brands understand the basic blocking and tackling of trade, which is the organizing, the managing, and then the storytelling to get them to understand ROI, to get them to understand bottoms-up accruals, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. And I think from when you play that out at a larger scale, it's the same problem. It's just massively scaled. I think the problem with optimization, and this is one of the lessons that we've hit on this podcast any number of times in any number of areas, is that from a data point of view, there's no truer four-letter acronym than GIGO, which is garbage in, garbage out, right? So if you're trying to optimize, but you don't have the basic information correct, you might as well just guess. It's faster. And then the mechanical piece, where I think it's interesting, and we'll talk about this in terms of how Vividly helps the small challenger brand solve this, where large brands get into trouble is two things. One, because these systems then get tied to all sorts of other systems that really move the needle in a business, like their ERP system, they're either part of the ERP system, which means that flexibility may not be their long suit, with all the respect in the world to my good friends at SAP, or that the system itself has to interface with a much more complicated series of other downstream systems that just make it clunky and hard to work with. So one of the things that we always tried to solve for was the problem that you have this system, but most of the work is still getting done in Excel. Like, people do all the trade planning in some homemade module that they've got, and then it's some intern's job to, quote, put it into the system. And at that point, you're not using the system at all. You're basically doing a lesser version of what you guys do, because you've got some spreadsheet model that the account handler built in 1979 that gets passed down from generation to generation that manages the trade for that specific retailer that has nothing to do with anything you're trying to accomplish as a business. So there's stuff in the system, but no one's using that to optimize. All you're really using that to do is record. And that's where I think a lot of the dynamism comes from. And speaking of dynamism, one of the things that was most impressive about your company, as we kind of looked at it to start with, are just some of your clients, right? So, you know, you've got Oatly, you've got Liquid Death, you've got Kodiak Cakes, shout out to my good friend Val Oswalt, like a lot of really smart brands in the world that are brands that people would point to as being kind of forward thinking. So what do you think these fast growing brands need that might be different than what a more traditional brand might need that you're bringing them?
Yeah, so I think when something that, you know, Vividly is really fond of is being that partner for that brand. We're not just a third party provider. We want to be there for you and support you in your journey of scaling your business. We have, you know, various tiers that these brands subscribe to tailor to what it is that they need, right? We have a forecasting tool, budgeting tool, you know, we have ROI, we have indirect trade rates, et cetera, bottoms up accruals. That aside though, brands come to us over our competitors because we listen to their needs. They're through the 7 years, we conduct regular product meetings with our clients to understand how is it that you got from 100 to 200 million as a business? How did your trade differ? What did you need? What did you do differently? In addition to that, we have a customer advisory board. We conduct monthly meetings with our clients, those that want to join free of charge. I guess it's kind of embedded in the contract that they're paying for. But it's, again, it's free to join. And that's where they provide.
It's good that your instincts kicked in and you found the mechanical way, which that needs to be accounted for.
Yes.
So it's good, good to watch.
Yes. But they, you know, they're able to join this product meeting, customer advisory board meeting, and give us feedback. And I will say it's a very raw meeting. There will be CFOs, CSOs, even deduction analysts that join and say, this takes me forever. We were just on a call with a client and we showed them a product enhancement. We have a sales mislog. The sales mislog ultimately is just a log in the system that showcases what promotions are unplanned that need sales attention. So it flags it for the sales team. Hey, sales team, you have a Sprouts BOGO. It's not planned in the system. Is this legit or not? And so they'll go in there, our deduction analysts and this customer advisory board, and they'll say, this is great. This is exactly what I need to reduce the email back and forth with my team. Everything can be housed in one central location, one database to understand insights, et cetera. So I would say, you know, really being that partner that can listen to their needs. We are very much a customer-centric driven organization. Jonathan, our CEO, does a really great job at this, is ensuring that we're having in-person meetings with our clients, especially when they're, you know, maybe going from 2x in their revenue in the current year. And so we're really set up to be that long-term partner with these brands. I will also say that we're experts in CPG. We have a wide variety of sales folks that have CPG experience. Our entire customer success team has some sort of CPG background. And again, the customer success team are just the individuals that meet with the clients to understand what concerns or problems they're facing with the platform. And, you know, we recently offer our deduction management services. So we're also able to help them understand trends and areas of opportunity. So we're kind of the one-stop shop for trade promotion management, which really appeals to these brands.
And for people that haven't had the thrill and excitement of managing the deduction process at some of the great retailers and some of the great wholesalers and distributors in the United States, this process is a nightmare. So,
and that's a generous description, Brian.
Yeah, it's time consuming. It can be a brutal process. So,
wow, that's incredible. By the way, Brian, please take a note. We need to more often reference terms from an archaic card game called Bridge whenever we describe things like long suits. I think that really talks to our age.
I was gonna throw some pinochle terms around if that made you happy, Peter. So
I know. Why not? Okay. So I love that. And just imagine that, Brian, listening to your client, actually trying to understand exactly contextual understanding of what that they've done, because simply just taking a whole bunch of numbers and plugging them into a spreadsheet and expecting to get better results than the rest of the industry is probably not realistic. So to that end, my question for you now, Nikki, is how important is the forward-looking view in trade management versus just filling in those cells in an Excel document and just tracking over time and looking at backcasting and saying, hey, this is what happened. And we can forecast that that's probably what would have happened if you had done exactly the same thing, which is kind of silly. So how are your best in class clients really improving their forecasting through the use of Vividly as a platform?
So I don't know if you guys have seen the recent article that PwC put out on how they have a performance evaluator, which is quite fascinating. And roughly 85% of brands actually struggle with understanding where they were overspent. And they don't know what product group, what retailer, what trade line, or excuse me, trade fund type. Was it a scan? Was it an MCB, slotting, et cetera? And so looking at that and, you know, thinking about this forward-looking initiative that I think all brands need to keep in mind, it's brands don't actually know if they have an issue until they see it. And so this kind of goes back to my initial answer. It's we really need to empower these brands to be able to organize and track their trade spend to see, you know, again, where are they underperforming? Where are they overperforming? And again, through insights, right? The devil's in the details. When you have good data in, you can ultimately gather good insights to understand what promotions need to be repeated, what promotions you maybe need to pull back. And again, they have the information within their actual chargeback. They can go to their accounting team to say, hey, why did this come in over or under? And so it's really ensuring that, you know, these brands are empowered to leverage a software, leverage an Excel template to understand where they need to head as a business.
Yep. And as a reminder, we're joined today by Nikki McNeil, the co-founder of Vividly. So yeah, and I think it's interesting to look at this in terms of some of the, what I'll call the old world measures in the physical store. But obviously a lot of the brands that we mentioned earlier that you work with have a very strong digital component to how they go to market as well, both purely digital as well as their very strong omni-channel brands within the retailers they sell to. Like, the, you know, Liquid Death's presence on Target's website is one of my favorite things in the world because it's about the least targety brand I can think of sometimes. So our brands starting to think about how they bring together this sort of their spend in the digital world versus their spend in the in-store world. And is it a new challenge for them to try to look at this stuff in a more integrated way? Are they even trying to, or are they still treating these as two very separate animals?
Interesting question. So one thing that I've noticed is certain verticals haven't been able to tap into the retail space. I'm a huge women's supplements lover. And I know that women's supplements are really hard to find in brick and mortar. I do know, though, recently that two of my absolute favorite brands have been able to get into retail, which is starting to shine a light on other verticals need to actually also tap into retail as well. So for example, I think the way that a brand is going to be able to expand their network is strictly by tapping into other consumer outlets, right? Target, Whole Foods, etc. And so with this new surge in the women's supplement arena, right, then they're able to really be able to get into retail, which they never were before. So I think the way that we're heading in 2024, right, it's like the year of the promotion is kind of what a lot of people are saying right now. While yes, digital and retail, I think are very important to have a nice cohesive mix, I think really where most brands are heading, particularly for consumer outreach and the different dynamics of these buyers, of these consumers, is really in the retail sector.
Yeah. And then just as a follow-up then, so for the brands that are then now actively engaged in both, do you find that they're bringing together their thinking around this stuff at all? Or do they, you know, because I mean, you've got some brands that are digitally native that launch in retail. You've got some clients that are kind of active in both. How do they think about this? Like, you know, are they thinking about their digital promotions any differently? Or?
So one thing that I've noticed with promotions in the digital side is they're very much like subscribe and save is a very common promotion that these brands are running. There's not a whole lot of levers to pull when you're in the digital side of things, which I do think sets brands up for a bit of a disadvantage, right? You think of retail, you think of features and displays and TPRs and coupons. Like there's a lot of sexy promotion lines that these brands can play with to see what drives the most bang for their buck, if you will.
Well, I think you've hit something interesting. And Peter, be curious for your take before the next question, because I think a lot of this today is, I think this is very symptomatic of one of the challenges you have in the world, which is that the people that know how these levers work don't understand how the levers in the digital ecosystem work particularly well. And a lot of the things that today look for all the world to me, as someone who's kind of played in both, as tactics that you would use in the physical world deployed in the digital world, are just done by different people. They're done by media buyers in the digital world. So the trade teams don't understand what they need to be able to do in the digital world to achieve some of these same objectives. Whereas media teams listening to this podcast have no idea, you know, blessedly they'll know more than they did 20 minutes ago when we started, but would have no idea how this basic conversation works. Peter, curious for your thoughts on that.
Yeah. The advent of the omni-channel world and, you know, pure player or omni-channel retailers, both ends of that spectrum. What's most interesting is, yeah, they all have their own chargebacks. They have chargebacks for different types of activities, but at the end of the day, it's all things that affect the overall profitability. And it's very frustrating for people at headquarters who've been dealing with one, not the other, to get their head around it. And not only get their head around it, but think about how they treat a different type of an ecosystem differently than the one in question. So from my perspective, it's been extremely challenging because I've seen people pop up and say, okay, we're particular experts at Amazon, right? We can do that, but don't ask us to do optimization around Kroger or Sprouts or other brick and mortar legacy retailers because that, and then even within Kroger, they end up trying to optimize according to how the old brick and mortar engagement worked and not necessarily in dealing with the digital merchandisers and particularly that digital ecosystem. So it's been incredibly challenging from my perspective in talking to all the professionals in our industry, Brian. So my question for you, Nikki, is just around the basic mechanics of this, because you've made reference to the fact that it's a lot of work, right? Very labor intensive, at times increasingly frustrating and a very expensive process. And at the end of the day, what are you left with? Many times an Excel spreadsheet and you get one cell wrong or you screw up a calculation and the whole thing falls apart and you got to send someone in to basically do like a forensic examination of the tool. And we know where that ends up. Right. So what are you doing at Vividly with your clients to help manage this in a more error-free and scalable way that these old legacy mechanisms driven by massive Excel spreadsheets with pivot tables just aren't really able to handle and eliminate all of that intensive effort and frustrating process.
I think even some competitors to Vividly today, their platforms are a bit archaic, Netscape era, and the sales members go into the platforms and they don't know where to go, where to navigate to create promotions in mass, how to analyze their promotions so they can, you know, report up to their team, etc. And so at Vividly, there are a couple tools that I want to call out. It's strictly advanced duplication. I think it's one of our sexiest features today for the sales side, for just duplicating promotions in mass across various months, years, and being able to change one piece of information in that promotion and get it done within seconds, right? The sales team needs to be out selling, not necessarily doing administrative work. And then there are controls that are embedded in the Vividly tool to have their boss go in and approve their deal or decline with adding comments. So it's a great way, it's a cohesive way for the sales team to go in with the appropriate controls to make sure their promotions are planned. The second side of things is our deduction scanner and matcher module for the accountants in the space. We have a reconciliation module embedded in Vividly where you load in the check remittances, right? When you get paid from a distributor, you load it in. You then process all the deductions, they're just expenses, and you pair them against the promotions that sales planned, right? We're looking for a unique product group, unique dollar per unit rate, month in the year, right? So it's keeping sales happy while making sure that the accountants can meet their accruals and understand, hey, you know, did cash come in way too high this month? We have to pull back on maybe raw material purchasing, et cetera, right? Because we know like trade spend is a direct, it has a direct impact on cash flow. So I would say, you know, over the course of 7 years, really that we've been in business is really being able to create some sleek tools for both parties to execute with lean teams. I think that's the biggest thing I want to call out here is that these brands don't have the cash flow to pay for, you know, expensive folks, right? And so they need technology to be able to cut those quick corners to get to the same end result.
Yeah, what I hear you saying, Nikki, is that you've built a platform that provides a single version of the truth to different archetypes and does so in a way that they can get to what they need very, very quickly. And it's something that they're able to scale out and get the answers they need to make efficient business decisions towards their trade promotion investment. Brian?
So, you know, as you think about bringing all this together, I think one of the interesting things is that, you know, you mentioned this earlier. One of your core constituencies is, you know, is the CFO, which is a very important part of a company, but not necessarily the part of the company that a lot of the service providers that we work with get in front of very often. So as you start to think about where the CFO's headspace is inside of these brands, what are the things they're thinking about from a trade point of view? And what are they looking to you for guidance and help on?
We need to come right on the money with the forecast. This is what the CFOs are thinking. But let's be real here. In reality, it's very challenging to accurately forecast certain promotions. I've been hit numerous times with BOGOs that we run that go usually way over forecast. And it's probably because we weren't viewing spins data in appropriate fashion, et cetera, right? It boils down to it. CFOs want to make sure they have trailing 12 months of cash flow, enough money on hand to put to other areas of the business, right? It's not just trade spend. It's also, you know, supporting supply chain, right? Because a part of trade spend is that non-trade component, a really big part, you know, with shortages, with service fines. We've seen a lot of service fines lately here at Vividly that we're helping our clients out with. Lots of spoilage deductions on saleables, even some recalls. So at the end of the day, the CFO is really wanting to ensure that what the sales team is putting together from a forecast perspective, he, she, they are receiving it, you know, maybe within a new 90 rolling days of when that promotion was executed. So she, he, they at least actually has some runway to understand what's to come in the near future. Again, promotions are ebb and flowing. This happened a lot during COVID, you know, store retail stores closed, et cetera. But at the end of the day, like that person wants a centralized location to understand what their forecast is, what's actualized, and how much money do I have left to maybe put back on the table to run more promotions or have that oh shit moment where we've spent too much when we got to pull other funds from sales, accounting to ultimately achieve our EBITDA and achieve our bottom line.
Terrific. Nikki, I have the pleasure of asking the last question. We got in the DeLorean and we went back in time in one of your previous answers. Now let's go forward in time, right? I think we'll use the hot tub this time instead of the DeLorean. But I want to understand from you, what do you see as being some of the most important changes in the world of trade promotion on the horizon, looking out towards, you know, a year, 2 years in advance, that are being driven either by the evolving nature of the industry or what have you? I'd really like to see how you're thinking about evolving Vividly so that it keeps right on the cutting edge of those changes in the industry.
Ooh, I thought you were going to go like from the brand perspective, but I'm excited to talk about the Vividly perspective. Hot Tub Time Machine is also a great movie, by the way. So diving into...
We'll do the rewatchables episode on Hot Tub Time Machine later, so you can join us for that.
So I think really the future ecosystem, if you will, of Vividly is really tapping into other verticals. So, you know, we've really predominantly been food and beverage, but we're wanting to go into health and beauty. Tapping into supplements. We have clients in both areas, and we're learning a hell of a lot with both of those clients. The way that we think about, you know, how to manage their deductions for them, think about how we actually plan promotions, and ensuring that we're up to speed with what it is that that brand's doing to allow them to continue to scale, not only as at their business, but also with us. You know, continuing to tailor to these small brands. I think, you know, Brian, you mentioned you're used to more of the enterprise level. These small brands see different problems than, you know, $100, $500 million brand will. And so we want to continue to tailor to these small brands. They have very lean teams. Some of them don't even know the difference between a scan and an MCB and how an MCB has a markup and a scan doesn't, and they don't plan those correctly. And so it's educating these brands to allow them to see that. Again, we have a dedicated customer success team where they know the ins and outs of how to plan promotions and that they can share some of these nuggets of information with those smaller brands. Lastly is, you know, really continuing to drive forward the need to be organized and manage your trade line through a centralized database. A software is ideal to help with the control side of things and then the insights side of things, and really allowing these brands to get to the sexier part, which is the ROI part, which is the optimization part. We can't get there until we have that good data.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I think it's interesting too that as the part of our constituency that is in the digital and retail media world, I think it's interesting to, everybody wants to solve this problem for the big brands first, but I think to some degree, trying to look at some of the smaller brands in your portfolio, say if you're an agency or something like that, and trying to figure out how to solve the problem when it's a little easier to get your arms around might actually be a really useful way to sort of think about this, you know, and especially a brand that's got access or is using, you know, a system like yours, which actually helps them organize the stuff in a really powerful way. And I mean, I really do think that some of the ideas in there about where this goes are particularly critical, as I think we're going to be entering an ecosystem, certainly for the next 12 to 18 months, it's going to be markedly more promotional than the landscape from the 3 to 4 years that preceded it. I mean, I was talking to the head merchant at a big retailer about this, and he's like, well, look, you know, for 2 years, we didn't have any space to promote anything because we were putting everything that was on sale had to do with COVID. And he goes, then we went for about 12 to 14 months, we didn't have any product. So because nothing was ever in stock. So once you get back to a more normalized environment, one of the things I've been counseling brands of all sizes to do is to just to be, you have the blessing of a blank slate right now from a promotional point of view. The muscle memory to go back to what you had in 2019 is so strong because everybody's going back to their 2019 forecast to try to understand how the world works because they know their data's wonky for a few years. But what that does is it embeds a lot of programs into your planning cycle that you might just start repeating almost out of habit or muscle memory, organizational muscle memory. And I think the ability to really relook at this is going to be absolutely critical. So, well, this has been a great conversation. Just to remind the audience, for more great content like this, please go to the cpgguys.com URL, www.cpgguys.com, where you can find all of our content. And if you think you or your company has some thought leadership to add to our conversation with the community, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com. And maybe you, yes, you can join us on the podcast, which is, I think, basically what your team did, Nikki. So that's how you got here. So, you know, dreams really do come true, as they say. And please don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com on the navigation bar. And thank you, as always, to what at the moment, by the time this airs, I'm going to guess we're going to be at about 29,000 followers. So thank you, as always, to our 29,000 followers. And most specifically, Nikki, thank you to you for the time today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is fun.
Super. And then just to recap, I think we covered a lot of ground today. And I know that some of this ground is going to be, you know, unfamiliar to some of the audience. If anybody wants to do a deep dive on a breakdown between a scan and MCB, I'm sure Nikki will be happy to run a seminar for you on the different mechanics of this stuff. But it's really important to understand that the trade line for a brand, which is massively bigger than the media brand, has its own mechanics, its own rules, its own language. It's decipherable and understandable if you put the effort into it. And one of the reasons why I was so excited to have your team on the podcast today is to show people, it's like, look, there is a way to do this. This isn't, there are so many media people I talk to who describe the way trade is managed as, quote, throwing spaghetti against the wall. That was one of the 10 largest media executives in the country. And it's like, no, this is a huge line item for companies. They're trying to get their arms around it. And trust me, the CFO cares about this way more than they care about the media spend. Like, not just the retail media spend, but the entirety of the media spend. This is a way bigger deal to the CFO than anything the media team is doing. So I love the way that you talked about the basic blocking and tackling and how essential that is, about the need that if you're going to get the forecasting, you've got to have good and accurate and clean data going into the system. You talked a lot about the way in which you've tried to tackle the problem by listening to the distinctive needs of these fast-growing brands that you have, how they got from point A to point B, what did they do, and then really refining the user experience to make sure that it reflects what those brands need and building the products that they need to be able to both manage it more effectively, but also more efficiently. So the tool that you talked about that allowed the brands to basically copy and paste the mechanics of a promotion across multiple retailers to simplify and speed the process up will be a big one. I think your notion that 85% of brands struggle to get their arms around where they're overspending, I don't think that's unique to small brands at all. I think it may actually be a worse problem with large ones. So there is a real need to try to understand all of this better and to really get to this. And I think one of the core promises of Vividly, in addition to just being a, is that whole notion of a single source of truth. And that single source of truth, as more people need to understand this, is going to become more important, not less. So I really I enjoyed a lot of the ground that you covered today. So thank you for the time, Nikki. Peter, thank you, although you have departed us for an arts and crafts adventure with your daughter at this point. And thank you to everyone who tuned in today. So have a great afternoon. And for those of you we saw at Shop Talk, we were delighted to have seen you. So take care, everybody. Thanks.
The content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.